Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wides.
And we are doing the Naturalist Show from Roberta's in Brooklyn. And today we are talking about the Galapagos Islands. And the music you heard was some Ecuadorian folk music. Since the Galapagos is part of Ecuador, we thought that would be appropriate.
Sure. Actually, it's a province of Ecuador.
Okay.
Right.
So we're going to do two shows about the Galapagos. For this first show, we'll talk about the islands themselves and the history of them and the geography of them and what it's like walking around on them, which I have a lot to say about. And then in the second show, we'll talk about the animals.
Good idea.
Okay. So
what do you have about the history and the geology?
Well, I'm sure you have more.
I'll fill it in.
I just got back from the Galapagos Islands. I was there in January. We're recording this at the beginning of February. And Bernie was there
about 8 years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it's the same. The islands are protected. And it's different now than it was when Janet, Bernie's partner, went 12 years ago. She said she sat on a tortoise. And they invited her to do it, to take a photograph. Now that would be absolutely off limits.
Right.
In fact, when I was there, one of the iguanas came and nibbled the pants of our guide, whose name was Darwin, really. And Darwin said, "We better back up, because they'll think we went too close to the animals." Mm. They're very strict. You have to stay 2 meters away from the animals. And each island has a path. You must be with a guide who's a nature service guide. They're certified guides. And you have to stay on the path. I have a photograph that I used of the path that we'll be posted on the website, which I want to talk about. But you have to stay on the path. There are arrows. It's very controlled.
That's good.
It's wonderful.
Years ago, it wasn't that controlled.
I gather.
One of the biggest problems they had were people landing illegally on the islands.
Right.
But now we have to stress that you can only go with a Peruvian guide.
Right. Ecuadorian.
Right. And you have to, as you said, go on specific paths.
Right. Small groups are only allowed.
Yes. How many did you have on your boat?
13 of us.
That's good.
And in fact, when we would be on one of the islands and in the distance we'd see another group, everybody would say, "Oh, you know, what is this?" And in some of the islands where we were anchored, there would be other boats. But everything is, the routes are planned.
Right.
Our guide explained that in January, each tour company chooses the route that they want. And he said the problem is a lot of them don't get it done in January. And so then they're assigned a route.
Hmm.
And they don't necessarily get the best the best itinerary.
Sure, they try to arrange that you don't run into
another
group.
That's right.
And I'll just tell you a quick story.
Please.
When we went, there was a guy on the boat who got sick. And they had to evacuate him.
Mm-hmm.
So it threw off our schedule. Because it's like we almost lost the day.
Yeah.
So the guides had to go and get it reprogrammed.
Right.
Where we would go, so we wouldn't mix in with another group.
Yes.
Did you see any of the big ships there, or they were all?
There was some. I would say, not huge, but much big. We were only, our ship accommodated maximum 14, so it was quite small. I put a photograph of it it's called the Cachalote, and I have a very nice photograph of it with a very weird volcanic remnant in the background. That's also on the website. You can take a look at it.
Okay, so let's just talk about the history a little bit.
Right.
And the geology, because the place is really fascinating. So the Galapagos Islands were made part of Ecuador a long time ago. And buccaneers used to stop there
mm-hmm.
To refuel you know, and I'm sure they shot a lot of animals in the old days.
Let me just say where they are, because I didn't know where they were until I went there. I had a look. Ecuador is on the west coast of South America. It's on sort of north, on the northern part of South America. And the Galapagos Islands are about 600 miles into the Pacific Ocean off the coast, west of the coast,
Okay. And if you want the coordinates of it, you know, the way we do things is longitude and latitude. Well, the Galapagos Islands straddle the equator.
Right.
So therefore, you know, we give locations in degrees, seconds, and minutes. So therefore, it's zero degrees, which is unusual.
Right.
Because some of the islands are exactly on the equator, and some of them are slightly above it and slightly below it. So, for example, I have the coordinates here. It's 0 degrees, 40 minutes south. This is the range of the islands. And then it gives the the longitude, which is 90 degrees 33 west.
Right.
So it's an interesting place because it's right on the equator. And if you looked at a map to try to find it, it's pretty far from land in any direction.
Right. I'm posting a map that shows the group of islands and shows the location with regard to the Ecuador coast. So you can see exactly what we're talking about.
So the names of the islands. Originally, the buccaneers who stopped off there, buccaneers were like pirates. But they had a license, from the British government to sink Spanish ships, and they would be sponsored by a rich guy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So a lot of the islands were named after crew members and after this guy who sponsored them. So there was a Seymour Island, and seriously, and things like that.
Well, a lot of them have two names.
That's because they're two. And then the Ecuadorian government changed the names to Spanish names.
Okay.
But the researchers still use the names that were used when Darwin was there.
Now I understand, because on the map it had one name, but our guide was calling the island by another name.
Right.
And I had figured out some of the maps showed both names.
That's the reason, because of the early guys, the buccaneers.
Right.
Okay, so anyhow, many years ago, Darwin... you know, he had
the other Darwin, not Darwin.
Charles Darwin,
right? Okay.
Who was the famous scientist? He was traveling around the world on the Beagle, which was a Navy ship. That was the purpose of the trip around the world, was to map everything they came to, all the islands and everything, with potential harbors for British warships and all that. And he was a passenger on the ship, and they gave him quarters, and he was. He was collecting specimens wherever he went. So when he got to the Galapagos Islands, he got a lot of information there, and some of the species there, which we'll talk about later, he spoke about in his famous book, Origin of the Species and or Descent, or whatever his two books were. So anyhow, as I said, should I talk about the geology a little bit?
Yes.
What do you think?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so the physical geology of the islands, they're a whole group of islands, and they're called an archipelago or an archipelago. I never remember, know how to, which is the correct pronunciation. Archipelago, archipelago. And an archipelago means that they're a chain of islands that were formed by volcanoes.
Right.
Okay? So if you can picture this, this is kind of a hard concept. The volcano that forms these islands starts way down in the mantle of the Earth.
Right.
You know, we live on a crust, which is about 20 miles thick in some places, maybe 60 miles thick. The mantle is very thick. It goes almost all the way down to the core of the Earth, and the Earth's diameter, its circumference is 25,000 miles. So you can figure out how much a cross-section would be.
Mm-hmm.
You can use your pi r square or whatever it is. So anyhow, there's it's called a hot spot in the mantle of the Earth. And you may say, what causes the hot spot? Okay.
What causes the hot spot?
Okay. Well, there's still residual heat from when the Earth was hot.
Ah.
It's still cooling off. And it's caused by radioactivity.
Okay.
Like radioactive elements like uranium and thorium and cesium.
Mm-hmm.
They're all naturally radioactive. And they're in the ground.
Okay.
And they produce so much heat that they start melting the rocks around them.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this superheated rocks driven up by steam up to the surface, mm-hmm. forming a volcano.
Right.
Okay? So picture that there's one hot spot.
Right.
There may be more. All right. So there's a hot spot. It's forming a volcano at the surface of the ocean.
Right.
Okay? It doesn't happen in a day. You know, it could take 10,000 years, a half a million years. Okay? So from that volcano, you get an island forming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right. After many years, maybe, you know, who knows how many years, the plate that everything is on, the tectonic plates, the plates are moving.
Mm-hmm.
So that island will move away from the hot spot
mm-hmm.
because the tectonic plates are moving
okay.
all the time. And then another island will be formed.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you got all these islands here.
Right.
And most of them were formed like the Hawaiian Islands.
Right.
It's the
right.
same thing.
Right.
So most of them are volcanic.
And what's interesting, when you see the photograph of the Cachalote and this broken piece of stone in the
yeah.
background, we said, what in the world is that? That's a remnant of the volcanic crater.
Right.
It's all eroded away. And there's just, you see, a couple of places, there are these remarkable pieces of lava
they
sticking
look like sculptures.
Up. Yeah, yeah. And you they just don't make any sense.
Right.
I'll give you, when you first get there, well, we started on Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just talk about that in connection with the volcano. And then
sure.
You fly to Quito, Ecuador, and then you fly in a little plane from Quito out to Baltra, which
right.
is a small island in the Galapagos.
That's the airport. Yeah.
And the airport is there. Then you take a little ferry for 5 minutes over to Santa Cruz, which is a big island. And what we did on Santa Cruz was we went in a bus up to the top of the island. And so you go, it's very dry, and you go through the different zones
mm-hmm.
of vegetation. And I have a photograph that I posted of the arid zone. So you can really see how dry everything is, brown. And as you go up further, there was no rain in the whole week I was there, but there was a little moisture, you know, from time to time. So you see a little more green. But each zone has different plants,
mm-hmm.
like we know happens everywhere in
yeah.
the world.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to the top of the road, there is this cliff with a flight of stairs up there. Did you do that?
I don't remember.
I looked at this flight of stairs, looked like it went to the sky. And I was with a group of English birders who were all retired people, except for one young man. And I looked at the stairs and thought, I do two flights of subway stairs and I'm out of breath, you know. And the next thing I know, they were all gone up to the top of the stairs. I dragged myself up the stairs, and it was only 600 meters. I thought, oh, it must be the altitude, but it was just a lot for me. And at the top is the crater at the top of the volcano. So there's a freshwater lagoon and it's completely circular.
Right.
And huge. And this is where the frigate birds were up there. They dip to wash their wings. They dip into
yeah.
the water and wet their wings and then shake them out. It's just incredible. But it's this incredible vista sort of at the top of the world. You have this huge crater.
Yeah, well, if you think about craters from volcanoes, that's almost the end of the life of the volcano.
Yeah.
It stops erupting
right.
and it starts to erode away
right.
and it forms this crater. And lagoons fill it up with fresh water,
right.
but eventually that island's going to sink down right. lower and lower and lower,
right.
and salt water's going to come in, and that's the beginning of reefs, of
right.
fringing reefs
right.
around
right.
it. That's how some reefs are formed.
And this is the yep. only island that has a freshwater lagoon on
yeah.
it. So it's, and some of them, now you will have the dates, you're better than I am about this. We went on one island where the lava was relatively young.
Yeah.
And I also posted that. You can see the difference. It looks liquid when you walk on it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Because on most of the islands, as you'll see, and oh, that's my path shot. You see, I brought it to show Bernie, the one
yeah.
on top. On most of the islands, you're walking on broken pieces of lava.
Yeah, it's terrible stuff.
It's exhausting. I came home and got a walking stick because you really need one.
And it was dark. It was dark gray.
Dark
black.
Gray and all irregular.
Yeah.
And all you see when you land on the island is a little beach usually or a dock of some kind. Are we getting a signal? How are we doing?
Okay, we're doing fine, Carlos, right?
Okay. when you land, there's a little beach or steps or something. It's harmless enough. And then you come to the path. And, of course, you don't know where the path is going to go or what it's going to be like. And it's this incredible journey, sometimes very difficult. And oftentimes the path is circular, which is, I like that a lot, so that you go a long way.
Oh, right.
You see wonderful stuff. And ultimately, you end up back where you were.
Mm-hmm.
And you always can have hope that the path will be easier, that it'll smooth out. The worst was, I think, on the last day. I think it was on Genovesa, the last day. Maybe we went on this, the most difficult path. I really thought, I am not going to make this very long. We ended up on the edge of a cliff. It was gorgeous. We had seen wonderful birds. It was just magnificent. And our guide said, okay, now we go. It was not a circular path. Now we go back the same way we came, and we'll just okay. take it slow. I was ready to cry.
Yeah.
But the English folks were all very sturdy,
well,
and nobody complained.
English are tough. When
they were wonderful. They were very positive, and,
right.
and so that was good for me. It was a growth experience for me. So I didn't cry. I just quietly went along, and they were very nice. At a couple of points, somebody said, do you need a hand? And I took somebody's hand to help me step down from some difficult spot. But
okay, so you were on, was this on Isabella that you went up to the top of the steps?
I thought it was on Santa Cruz.
Maybe Santa Cruz. Okay.
Right.
Well, Isabella has the biggest volcano, the biggest remains. It's 5,600 feet.
Right. It might have been Isabella.
Yeah.
I couldn't find my
really
notes.
Know. Yeah. Above sea level.
Yeah.
Okay. So just very briefly,
mm-hmm.
there are 15 main islands.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I was not on Isabella because that's the big island.
Yeah.
And I did not go to Isabella. That
okay.
was the second week the group was going to Isabella.
Isabella
no,
yeah.
it was Santa Cruz.
So there are 15 main islands, three smaller islands, and 107 rocks and islets.
Right.
And the okay, just one more thing about the geology, and then we'll move on a little bit more. Okay, if you folks remember, if you learned this in school, that the whole crust of the earth is made up of plates.
Right.
That are sections, and they're all moving.
Right.
They're moving slowly. So the Galapagos Islands are on what it's called the triple junction
mm-hmm.
because they're on the Nazca plate, which is a tectonic plate, which is moving east, southeast, diving under the South American plate at the rate of 2.5 inches a year. So
okay.
that plate is really moving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one explanation for all the volcanoes and earthquakes on the west coast of South America,
mm-hmm.
because this plate is moving and going under the west coast of South America, in Chile,
mm-hmm.
and all those countries along the west coast, and that forms the earthquakes.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
And the volcanoes.
Right.
So that's why it's called the Triple Junction. Besides that, it's atop the hot spot.
Right.
Right? And the first islands formed at least 8 million years ago. They don't really know. Possibly 90 million years.
Right.
It's very hard to determine
right.
it. Moving away from the mantle plume, the islands get younger. So, by the way, I said it's like a conveyor belt
mm-hmm.
to form those islands. Okay? And the names, as I said, they were originally, the Buccaneers gave them names, but the Ecuadorian government has given them Spanish names.
Right.
That's why they have two names.
I'll give you one example.
For example, Baltra. You were on Baltra, right? Okay. So Baltra used to be called Seymour Island. Probably after one of the sailors.
Right.
Okay. So that's just a funny example.
All right. So I just...
Go ahead.
How much time do we have? Because the clock... I couldn't see the clock. Okay. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk some more about the islands.
Okay. We're going to stop now, Carlos, and we'll be back in a minute.
Okay. Sponsored by the Hearst Ranch. At Hearst Ranch, ranch manager Cliff Garrison describes their philosophy... Raising cattle on grass is both an ancient practice and one that is standard in much of the modern world. Sometimes the old ways are the right ways. We believe that our methodology is the right one for us. For more information on their premium grass-fed beef, visit HearstRanch.com.
Hi, this is Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wides. We are the Naturalists.
And
today. Carol, take over.
We are back talking about the Galapagos Islands. I just want to talk a little bit about the vegetation. Basically, it's very arid in most of the islands. There is a rainy season. When I was there, it was the beginning of the rainy season, and our guide was telling us to bring raincoats along because the skies evidently just open up. But it didn't happen. We didn't get any rain at all, fortunately, when we were walking around. But it was very dry, and there you see beautiful cactus, which I also have a photograph of from South Plaza Island. And you see this red vegetation, which is not red when there isn't moisture. But the minute there's moisture, it changes color.
Changes red.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can really see how dry it is on the South Plaza Island photograph. And you see these big cactus plants that are everywhere that are really quite spectacular. They make yellow flowers that are very nice. I'm interested, as is Bernie, we're interested in a lot of things, but I was interested in butterflies. And when we landed in Santa Cruz, I told the assorted group that I was with, who are birders, that I'm interested in butterflies, and if anybody spots a butterfly, please let me know, because I want to photograph it. And I'm talking about that now, because it was really almost impossible to see any butterflies. So I'm not talking about them in the animal show.
Okay.
It was so dry. And, of course, we know butterflies nectar on flowers. And there were almost no flowers. So we saw on one island, we saw on the island where the tortoises are, that's Santa Cruz. We saw one queen butterfly. On another island, we saw two. That was nectaring on Lantana. On another island, somebody spotted a couple of sulfurs, which I think was starving to death. I couldn't get a photograph. And I did get a photograph, which I posted, of a Galapagos blue, which is the only other butterfly.
Endemic to the islands?
Yes. It's like a lot of other blue butterflies that you see. And then there are basically eight species of butterflies that are found sometimes on the islands.
Yeah, so it's not a great butterflying place.
Not at all. And there are the populations are also very sparse.
Yeah.
So not only are there very few species, but there aren't many individuals. And then there are some moths, too. There are three species of hawk moths, which feed on the cactus.
Cactus flowers.
The cactus flowers.
Yeah.
And a couple of day-flying moths that are very beautiful. But that's all. I just want to say, so everybody was on the lookout. They were very nice to yell Carol when they saw a butterfly, and I'd run with my camera, and the butterfly would be gone. So it was very tough.
I'll say one more thing about Charles Darwin, because as I said, he was there.
Right.
The Beagle stopped there because they wanted to map the harbors and the waterways and all that. So when Darwin was there, what he noticed was that there's a bird on the island called the finch.
Yes.
Okay. In fact, I think now it's called Darwin's finch.
There are lots of finches.
Okay, so there are finches, and finches are about the size of sparrows.
Right, and very boring looking, I must
say.
As
we used to say, they're little brown jobbies.
Yes, right.
Okay, in Central Park. But what Darwin noticed was that the beaks of the finches on the different islands were different, and he couldn't figure that out. But that became one of his basic tenets for his book on evolution.
Right.
Okay? Survival of the fittest and speciation.
Right.
Okay? So we're not going to talk a lot about Darwin, because our last show, my friend Saul did, and he dwelt on evolution a lot, and he spoke about the Galapagos and the finches.
Right, but we should at least say it's adaptation.
Right. Yes, and that's what drives evolution, is survival.
Right.
For example, let's say on one island, there's a lot of certain kind of plant with seeds, okay? And the finches eat the seeds.
Right.
Now, on that island, maybe the next island over, there aren't so many of those plants, but more insects. So the finch evolved. Some of them have a pointy beak for catching insects, and some of them have a very thick beak for cracking up nuts and seeds. So that's what drives evolution, is adaptation. If you don't adapt, that you die, and that's the end. They take you off the tree of life and put a marker there and say, that's it.
And the birders on my trip were listing the species that they saw. At the end of the evening after dinner, they would sit with their list, and everybody was very determined, especially one person who shall remain nameless, who was very determined. He would go anywhere to get the one finch that we didn't have after the first week.
Sure.
So, but they were, and interestingly, in terms of adaptation, we did see some flowers that had very long petals.
Hmm.
They were tube-like flowers. And I remember from the butterfly book, and the bat book, in fact, that those are often pollinated by bats. I was asking people about bats, but I didn't get much information. But I thought this must be a moth or something with a very long
proboscis. Yeah.
That feeds on this. And sure enough, one of the hawk moths is a moth that we wrote about in the book, because the proboscis is twice as long as the insect's body.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that that's the moth that feeds on those flowers.
Right.
And that's the adaptation, that the animals adapted to match the flowers, and the flowers adapted to match the animals so that pollination could occur.
Yes, it's a joint evolutionary thing. Between the plants and the animals.
Right.
And there's one other adaptation that we can talk about briefly, is the tortugas, which are
tortoises. Yes, yes.
Shall we mention that now?
Yes, yes,
yes. Okay, so on the islands, there used to be many, many of these tortugas, which are giant turtles, land turtles.
Right.
So they're called tortoises, or in Spanish it's tortugas. And if you go down the tip of Key West, there's tortuga. Island of Tortuga.
I thought Tortola is
There's Tortuga.
Tortuga also,
is right off the coast of Key West.
But Tortola is in the Caribbean.
And there's a park there now, because there used to be a fort.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Tortuga because there were the big turtles there, which of course are all gone now.
Right.
So anyhow, what these tortoises did was, because of where they were living and the availability of food, the front part of their shells, where their necks come out, is a ridge over the shell. And the ridges are different on the different islands, because some of the tortugas were feeding on stuff that was high up, and they had to be able to stretch their necks out and reach the stuff that was high up. So over the centuries, the ones that had the longest necks passed on their genes, and the ridge of the shell was higher so they could stick their necks out.
Right.
And then the ones that were feeding on the ground certainly didn't need that high ridge behind them.
Right, that's right. And it's quite a difference. It's quite a significant difference when you see the two different types of tortoises.
Yeah.
When they're not the different types, just the different adaptations on the different islands.
Same species, because they can interbreed.
Right.
So they're the same species.
What else? We talk about, there's a lot of... I'm trying not to talk about animals.
Okay.
Right. It's very rich in... We'll give you a little introduction, unless there's something you want to add. I'll just sort of talk generally.
Yeah, I'll just add one more thing. There's a family of scientists that live on one of the islands, and they're called the Grants. That's their family name. They've been there for about 30 years.
Ah.
And they are doing research on the finches. Okay? And nobody else can go on that island. They have exclusive use of that island because they don't want people to disturb them.
Mm-hmm.
And they come there every year. They don't stay the whole year, but they stay a good chunk probably of the summer season. I think he's a professor somewhere. And they've been doing research for 30 years. So the Grants are famous for doing research on adaptation.
Right. And as you would say, they probably get lots of grants to do it.
That's right. That's why they got that name, right? That's terrific. Okay, so I think I covered that stuff, and what we can do is we spoke about the different islands.
Right.
We spoke about the geology, and we spoke about how they were formed.
Right.
Most of them are volcanic. Some of them are not volcanic. Some of them were formed by uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is a shift in the rocks of the crust that will rise up. Because over many thousands of years or millions of years, they were pressed down by the volcanoes. But when the volcanoes eroded away, then the land rose up.
Right.
So that's another way that they were formed.
And the water is very clear.
Yeah.
That's another. You can see also the underwater formations when you ride around in a little boat or when you are snorkeling or diving. It's magnificent because there's so much life in the water.
Yeah. What was the water temperature when?
It was perfect.
Was it?
I know you wore wetsuits when
Yeah, because when we were there, it was cold.
No, they.
What was it, 80s, the water, you think?
I don't think it was that warm, but I don't like cold water. And I didn't want to wear a wetsuit. And I said, if it's cold. I was brought up on Long Island Sound, the water was always cold.
Right.
And you had to inch yourself in. And, you know, it was, I'm used to that. The water was very pleasant temperature. It was. I don't know how to estimate it. It wasn't in the 80s, maybe in the 70s, but it was nice. It was cool. It wasn't hot.
Right.
But it was not unpleasant. It wasn't difficult to go in off the beach.
Mm.
Some people wore wetsuits, but they had brought them with them.
Right.
You could get a wetsuit on the boat, but so it was absolutely not necessary.
Did you do any snorkeling at all? Did anybody?
Well, I like to snorkel.
Yeah.
But I was on the beach one of the first days overlooking the it's full of seals.
Right.
And I know Janet said she had a big thrill when a little seal came right up to her mask. And I'm looking around, and there's this beach master, which is the Papa Seal.
The chief male.
Right. Sitting on in front of, where right below where I was, with some females and some pups. And actually, Darwin was standing near me, so we watched this together, and he pointed out what was happening. Another male came into the cove where the beach master was, and this big lumbering seal suddenly turned into a maniac arrow and chased this other guy.
Right.
But I never saw any such a transformation. Leaped in the water and zoomed out after this other male. And
well, that was his harem, all those
absolutely.
Females.
Absolutely. But that's all it took. I saw that and I said, no. And Darwin said, he had told us before that they won't bother you, yeah. Even if it's the beach master who comes towards you. He just is letting you know this is his territory, and all you have to do is not get excited and just back off. But it was really terrifying
sure.
to see him
they
get
have big teeth.
Violent like that. So that sort of cooled me out for snorkeling.
Yeah.
I snorkeled a little bit off the beach, and one point I was in the water, and a little baby seal came over near someone else, so I knew it was there, and it came over past me, and it didn't scare me, it just came near me. But I was very leery of the beach masters.
Oh, sure.
Although the other people on the boat, I must say, they were very brave. People went off snorkeling on their own, and the snorkeling was marvelous. I mean,
yes.
You saw lots of...
I remember when we did it off the boat, so not on the beach.
Yeah.
And the boat came, or one of the smaller boats, you know, the Zodiacs
right.
and so on. And we were close to a cliff that went down in the water. And we got in the water, and we were able to see the marine iguanas
yeah.
feeding on the algae, which you'll
right.
we'll talk about later.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We saw there were a lot of rays of different types, sharks. The most exciting moment, I would have to say, as I think about it, I was in a Zodiac with the captain and a few other people. Normally he didn't come with us in the boat, but he was very nice. Douglas, his name was. And as we were setting off in the Zodiac, he was waving goodbye to us. So I said, just being friendly, Douglas, why don't you come with us? So he said, okay, and he jumped in the boat, and the guy who normally drove the boat got out. And so we went around with him. And at one point, we see this fin. Just like I've seen sharks in the water, but you see them usually underneath the water.
Yeah.
A shark, just like in a cartoon, comes past us like this. And we said, oh my God, what is that? He said it was a hammerhead shark.
Oh yeah, they
have, not
yeah.
far from us. I mean, it wasn't frightening because we were in the boat, but it was so exciting to see that fin. Oh, and we saw once more when we was sailing from one island to another. We also saw that hammerhead shark. That yeah. was really something. So there's a lot in the water.
Yes. Now, the waters around the Galapagos are unusual
mm-hmm.
because you're right on the equator.
Right.
And it's usually the water's warm. But the Galapagos waters are cooler because there's this current called the Humboldt Current,
right,
which comes up from Antarctica,
right,
and up the coast of South America,
right,
and swings out to the Galapagos, bringing cold water.
But in January, that
yeah,
current moves, it changes,
it's
so you don't get that cold
supposed to do that.
Water, yeah.
It doesn't do it all the time. Some years it doesn't do it. And
it did
then
it this year, because it sure wasn't
cold. And then
they
have a drought there, because it affects the surface temperatures.
Right.
And we won't go in. El Nino and La Nina and El Nino, did they talk about that at all?
Yes.
Yeah. It changes the whole conditions around the Galapagos, because this current comes up and it affects the surface waters, and if the surface waters are not warm, you don't get evaporation,
right,
so you don't get rain.
Right.
So when we were there, the year before there had been a drought, so we were worried that we wouldn't see a lot of critters, but they were fine,
mm-hmm,
and we saw them. So that's what makes it unique, and we'll save talking about the animals later.
Yes, you see, we're tempted. We're spilling over into the animals, maybe we'll stop.
Yeah.
And the next show, we'll talk about the animals, because there are so many wonderful
Because
animals.
I wanted to talk about the penguin.
Okay, we'll talk about the penguins. This is a cliffhanger.
This will be a cliffhanger.
Tune in next week.
Yeah. Carlos, how much time we have left?
We can stop now.
Okay, Carlo said that we could stop now.
Yeah, let's stop.
And we're going to stop with a cliffhanger.
Right.
And on those cliffs, there are many birds hanging around.
That's true, too.
And we'll be back with the show.
Next show,
we'll be talking about the animals on the Galapagos.
Yeah. So more about
And that's the best
trips.
Part of it.
It really is.
Is the animals.
Right. So you've heard the worst part. Now you're going to hear the best part.
Yeah, well, we gave you the basics.
That's right. Okay.
Start from the ground up.
Very good. All right, looking forward to
the next
show.
Okay, we're signing off now until the next show with Carol and myself, and we'll talk about all the critters.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.